The readings for our second Sunday in the season of remembrance are 2 Kings chapter 2 verses 1 through 12, the Gospel of John chapter 15 verses 12 through 17, and an excerpt from Dietrich Bonhoeffer's Letters and Papers from Prison. These can all be found on the written document of this sermon on our website. Grace to you and peace from God, our Creator, and Christ, our wisdom. Amen. On Tuesday night, while watching the election returns, I was also keeping an eye on my Facebook feed. As the results became more and more ominous, posts from friends and colleagues became more and more desolate. The one that hit me the hardest, because it put into words exactly what I was feeling, was from a colleague in New York City. Pastor Heidi Newmark, who you may know from her books and other writing, also that she was Heather Hargrave's pastor when she lived in New York, wrote, "I feel like I did watching the towers come down, sitting there watching a disaster of devastating proportions and not being able to do a thing about it." I had already been thinking that this felt like 9/11. And in some ways, it's worse. Knowing that almost half the people of my country abandoned the values that I hold near and dear as an American is a devastating blow. On 9/11/2001, we came together in our grief. Of course, that would be turned later into an excuse for war, but for a time, we were united in mourning the loss of life that day. But on 11/8/2016, our disunity, already pronounced, erupted into gaping wounds that no one knows, or maybe wants to know, how to heal. This past week has been difficult, to put it mildly. We've been like walking wounded. On Wednesday, I was depressed. By Thursday, I was angry and just generally grouchy about everything. Although I did remark several times that I'm glad I live here in the Bay Area where it's safe to commiserate with one another. I've been offering support to my cousin back in an ultra-conservative part of Pennsylvania. And yet even here in the Bay Area, there have been reports of violence and harassment. As the San Francisco Chronicle headline read, "Election ruptures civility here in America's bastion of inclusivity." And now it's Sunday. We've come together to grieve and to see a way forward. I admit that I'm still processing all of this myself, so I'm not going to insult you with pious admonitions to just have faith and all will be well. Though that might ultimately be true, there's more to it than simply sitting back, hoping and expecting that God will take care of it. As I said, by Thursday, I was experiencing a chaotic mix of emotions, as I expect you were too, swinging all the way from wanting to withdraw from anything to do with politics to being ready to join the protest lines and vent my rage, from sitting with my grief to feeling the urge to do something. Mostly, though, I was just grouchy about everything. But by that evening, when I hadn't accomplished everything I needed to do for the week, which made me even more grouchy, I was tempted to skip my meditation group that was scheduled for that night. But I also knew that it was probably what I should do, so I went. Thank goodness. If you've seen the announcement in Keeping in Touch for Sufi heart-based meditation, that's what I do. While it's a Sufi practice, it's totally compatible with our own tradition. We don't have time here to go into more detail about it, but you are always welcome to ask me about it. My point is that as we seek a way forward with appropriate action, our decisions must come from the heart, from the center of our being, where the ground of our being resides. While going into meditation or silence or any other spiritual practice, might appear to be withdrawal from the world. It's not. It is preparation for engagement with the world. I entered meditation Thursday evening wondering how I could ever tame this chaos. And I left with a sense of calm that I hadn't felt since before Tuesday. And I was reminded once again that our peace comes from within and that our spiritual practice will sustain us. Now, being here together is a spiritual practice, but this is just 1 hour a week. And I encourage you that if you don't have one already, that you'll seek out a practice that will sustain you for all the hours of the week. It doesn't have to be meditation. Could be music or art or any number of things. And I'm always more than happy to talk with you about that too. I'm sharing my feelings and experiences of this week, not as an example of piety, but because I'm firmly convinced that it is from the spiritual center that we'll be able to work through our grief as well as do the work of justice and peace. Balance is a word that's been coming to my mind a lot this week. Balancing the call to go more deeply into the heart of my being in order to connect with the divine, with the call to immediate action in the face of threats to members of our community. And this is the balance that we need to find. The grief over our fractured nation is so profound. It can't, nor it should not, be rushed through or glossed over, as painful as it is. It's like a death. And to speak now of healing is premature. I find it almost prophetic that the readings Kate chose for today are so apropos. All of them take place just before a death. Elijah is about to be taken into heaven. Jesus is about to be crucified. Dietrich Bonhoeffer will soon be hung for his participation in a plot to assassinate Hitler. Their friends are left to grieve. On this second Sunday in our season of remembrance, our emphasis is on friends and members of the community who have died. And we remember and honor all of them today. But on this post-election Sunday, it is also incumbent upon us to grieve for our community itself, for our nation. At the same time, we are looking for ways to mobilize our indignation into right action. You may have noticed that we're recording this sermon. That's because a call went out this week from a group called Faithful America to pastors all over the country asking us to speak bravely and prophetically about what our faith requires of us in this moment of crisis. We need to make sure those sermons are heard not just by those in the pews, but by everyone who is fearful and wondering if it's safe to speak up. There's a flyer with more information about Faithful America, and there's another one with an option for you to be a part of the movement. It has a petition that reads, "As a follower of Jesus, I will join with my sisters and brothers in resisting any and all attacks by the Trump administration on the most vulnerable among us. Following the examples of the saints and martyrs and guided by prayer and discernment, I am prepared, if necessary, to risk my own safety and well-being for the sake of others." Can you hear the echo of the words from John's gospel in there? There is no greater love than to lay down one's life for one's friends. You shouldn't sign this petition without weighing what Bonhoeffer called the cost of discipleship. It's not just about Jesus laying down his life for us. It's about us taking up a cross and following too. It's serious business. Another call that has gone out this week is hashtag safety pin, which was actually inspired by a movement in the United Kingdom. Following the Brexit vote, many people in the UK began wearing safety pin to show their solidarity with refugees and immigrants, so that without a word, it says, that without a word, people may see your safety pin and know that you are a friendly face, that they are safe with you. Now, I have to tell you that not everyone supports this idea. And I agree with critique that it could be an easy, feel-good thing to do with no real intention behind it. And I agree with the questions being raised, such as how much is one ready to risk? And should there be training for this? These are good questions and should be taken into account and discussed. I, for one, am willing to wear the pin. I liken it to the yellow star worn by non-Jewish people in France and the Netherlands during the Nazi occupation as a sign of solidarity. And I pledge to stand with and for persons of all races, ages, ethnicities, gender identities, economic status, physical and mental abilities. And there are pins here for anyone who wants one. But I strongly discourage wearing it just because it's an in thing to do. And I strongly encourage all of us to take any of these actions only with a solid spiritual foundation. This is serious. Read the examples in the Quran and ask yourself what you would do in these situations. A woman on BART speaking on the phone in Assyrian is confronted by another woman who called her an ugly, mean, evil little pig who might get deported. A woman at a gas station in Napa witnessed a man walk up to an Asian American woman and say over and over again, "We won, now get the F out of my country." A San Francisco woman wrote on Facebook that a white man shoved her and then drew a knife on her. She says he called her the N-word very aggressively for several minutes. You know, I've never been a big fan of the battle imagery in the passage from Ephesians, but it does seem to apply today. Draw your strength from Christ and from the strength of that mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can stand firm against the tactics of the devil. You must put on the armor of God if you are to resist on the evil day, and having done everything you can to hold your ground. Don't be distracted by the devil or the evil day language, but know that evil does exist, not only in the hearts of people who would go against God's will of peace, compassion, and justice for all people and all creation, but also in the systems that propagate racism, sexism, homophobia, xenophobia, and all manner of mayhem. Like it or not, we're part of those systems, and we must have a good measure of humility in our condemnation of others. At the same time, we must work to transform hearts, including our own, and transform systems in the hard work of discipleship. The time for a positive Christian response to hatred and bigotry is now. I can't believe it was just 2 short weeks ago on Reformation Sunday that I talked about the confessing church in Germany, those pastors and congregations who were willing, unlike many, to go against the Nazi regime. It's not hyperbole to say that parallels have been drawn. Please do read the article In Keeping in Touch by Jim Wallace from Sojourners. There is a movement growing. We will not allow others who call themselves Christian to hijack Jesus any longer. This is not a call to be afraid. It is a call to be faithful. We as a congregation will continue to be committed to this work, and I pray that we will have the courage and the commitment to stand united, first united, on the forefront of spiritual and political transformation here in San Francisco, in all the other communities in which we live and work, in our nation and in our world, to pay the cost of discipleship gladly for Christ's sake. Amen.